because this is probably one of the most important topics, because it's going to affect all of us, whether you develop for ASP.NET, WCF, Metro, the framework, Visual Studio. These are the core tools that each one of us use. And so what we'll be doing today is taking a look at how .NET 4.5 is evolving. And there's actually a couple of bullet points that you need to keep in mind when installing the 4.5 framework, and we'll talk about those in a second. We'll also talk a little bit about how your requests and your feedback have actually impacted the dev tool. And at the end, I'm going to encourage you to continue up with telling the Visual Studio Dev Division team what it is that you want to see inside the next Visual Studio. And finally, we'll talk about building more responsive apps using Visual Studio 11. So we've talked a lot today about Metro in the beginning, but the framework is nowhere near dead. Any rumors of its death has been greatly exaggerated. In fact, the framework lives right side by side with the Windows runtime and provides a lot of the similar sorts of services as the Windows runtime, but for the .NET world for a variety of platforms outside of the Windows 8 ecosystem. In fact, the CLR exists on things like Linux through the Mono runtime as well. The runtime itself has evolved quite a bit in the 4.5 timeframe, except it's been a lot of performance and tuning and tweaking. And so what you'll see in terms of things like your typical exception handling, some of the base class libraries, garbage collection, is nothing largely new from a end user API perspective. But you will see a bunch of things enhanced as a result of some of these changes on top in terms of the web, desktop, and server development. The important thing to know is .NET 4.5 is a little different than what we've seen from past releases. In past releases, through version 1.0, 1.1, and 2.0, we've had brand new runtimes. Then in 3.0, you kind of thought you might get a new runtime, but actually you got a set of libraries that ran on top of the 2.0 runtime. And likewise, 3.5 was another set of libraries that ran on top of the 2.0 runtime. Well, they've made it a little more confusing once again, you know, just to cover all their bases. And with .NET 4.5, this is actually technically not running on top of the 4.0 runtime. It's actually a replacement of the 4.0 runtime. And this is kind of a key thing to kind of keep in the back of your mind, because there are potential issues around application compatibility that you need to be starting to think about and test for. Now, before you panic and go back to your office and say, OK, we can't go to .NET 4.5, it's going to break everything, you know, risk, 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 know that there's a huge investment on Microsoft's part in terms of ensuring backwards compatibility. All they're asking for you is to download the beta, hit F5, run your app, and just see if there's anything obvious that breaks. 99.999% of the time, it should be fine, unless you were doing something really, really advanced with the core runtime itself. Chances are this will be a transparent upgrade. But it is something to be aware of. And I'm sure there'll be a couple of those really oddball edge cases that will come up over time because of this slight shift in the runtime policy. The other piece that's still kind of up for debate, and you'll know this if you've downloaded the beta, is how far back the .NET 4.5 runtime will go. Right now, it ships for Windows 7 and later. And so if you've got Windows XP, you've got no .NET Framework 4.5 today. And this is a key piece, again, where they're looking for your feedback in terms of how important that is to determine the final release. And you've got time yet. We've got an update to the Windows 8 timeframe coming out in June. And then we'll see a release, hopefully, later this year on that. And so you've got time to chime in your voice as to whether or not Windows XP, Windows Server 2003, matters to you from a .NET 4.5 time or a .NET 4.5 functional deployment perspective. So please raise your voice, and I'll give you the links at the end of the slide deck here. There's also been a number of things added right across the stack, and it doesn't really matter which area you're in. There's neat new stuff, and unfortunately, in 20 minutes, I'm not going to drill into all the bits and pieces. But this is the obligatory lots of words on the slide slide. To show you that there's lots of things new. As an ASP.NET developer, I know personally HTML5 and some of the mobile and WebSockets pieces are really, really interesting to me. But I also know, as somebody who interfaces with WCF web services, the fact that they've simplified the configuration so that when I add a service reference, it doesn't barf all over my web config, is just a real nice touch to making my life a whole lot simpler. And again, a lot of these features are coming out of the connect.microsoft.com and the user voice sites that you've said, you know, these are things that are important to me. So I encourage you to keep feeding back, because this is how we get better product. The coolest new thing, of course, is async. And this is really a realization that most desktops, servers, even tablets and phones are shipping with multi-core processors. And how do we as developers take advantage of that easily? Well, in a minute here, we're going to go into a little bit of a demo. I'm going to show you kind of the progression of from synchronous to the old world async to the new world async, using ASP.NET as the example, and show you how much easier it has gotten. But I can tell you one thing's for sure. Anytime I open up a piece of code when I walk into a client, I see threadpool.qUserWorkItem. I start to get worried, because threading is one of those really, really difficult things to get right. And fortunately, they've done a lot of work to make it much, much easier inside the language to take advantage of it. The tooling itself has also gotten significantly better. And it's not just about building Windows runtime applications. If you're doing any sort of games or graphics work, in fact, there's actually a full 3D modeling tools that are now starting to show up inside Visual Studio because of the DirectX impact on Visual Studio. And so if you want to develop for the Xbox or develop games for Windows desktop or Windows runtime, or Windows RT is the tablet, you've got some very, very powerful tools sitting right inside Visual Studio today that you might not know it's there. And again, as a web developer, I love the fact that JavaScript IntelliSense is there. It makes a world of difference to be able to start saying $dot, get all my jQuery library IntelliSense there, or some of the other JavaScript libraries out there automatically. Finally, the IDE, of course, has been significantly improved from a performance perspective. And again, I'm going to share with you a tip at the end of what you can do to help drive that even further. One of the most interesting things I like is the pluggable unit testing. And I'm sorry, I'm standing in front of that bullet point. Pluggable unit testing, which allows you to use the test framework of your choice. And so how many people out there are using MS Test, the Microsoft test framework for writing unit tests? How many people are using NUnit? Oh, I can see a good chunk of you using NUnit, XUnit. Any XUnit guys out there? Oh, yeah, I see a couple of XUnits. Good, good. So for those of you that have outgrown the MS Test framework, again, the Visual Studio team is starting to recognize that their goal is not to be the only provider of test frameworks, but instead to be the platform or the palette of test framework out there. And so you get a runner in there that's completely extensible. And you'll start to see more of that coming out of the Visual Studio team, where they say, hey, we're not the only one. We're going to provide you a default option, which is really good. But if you want to go beyond that, there's other options out there. And of course, this is probably my most exciting one. And again, sorry, it's cut off, but project and solution backwards compatibility. So for all of you out there who are the forerunners in your organizations that go and download the beta tools or go and download the net new releases the day after the RTM, the good news is you don't have to wait for all your colleagues to catch up to start using the new tools. In fact, you could start today with Visual Studio 11 beta, using it inside your production environment, writing apps for .NET 4, save those projects back, and let somebody else in Visual Studio 2010 open up that project and open up that solution. And this, again, was driven largely by we, the community, voicing out to Microsoft saying, hey, I want to be on the bleeding edge, but I don't want to wait for my team to get there. And so you need to help me out. And so that was a really, really awesome request. I'm really glad to see that. And it encourages you to go out and download the beta bits and actually start playing with this today. So let's dig in specifically to the responsive apps piece, because I think that's a really neat thing. And I want to kind of, again, show you how easy it is. Barry touched on it a little bit with the Windows runtime applications, where he showed you the async await. I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about what that actually means. In reality, it all comes down to this. You've got multiple cores and processors on your machines. How do you take advantage of all of them all at the same time? And how do you do it easily? And that's what building more responsive apps is all about. And we've had things like the task parallel library, the thread pool control built into the framework. But again, it's required quite a bit of thinking to make it work. What they've done in Visual Studio 11 and .NET Framework 4.5 is make it really easy not only to do it from a tooling perspective, but extend that across all of the APIs that you're used to, whether you're writing web services, whether you're writing web apps, Windows apps, or Metro apps. So let's go ahead and take a look at some code. introduce you to the Visual Studio environment. And you've seen this over the past couple of demos, but some of the most interesting aspects of the Visual Studio environment here are not only just the awesome new look, and I say that a little tongue-in-cheek, there's certainly a lot of debate over the Battleship Gray UI, but more importantly, what they've done to think about what you, the average developer, needs and how you work. And so one of the recognition points is that we as developers are largely keyboard-driven type people. You know, using the mouse is a little bit of a slowdown when you're trying to work at a fairly quick pace. And so everything in here is both hotkey-driven, but also search-driven as well. Barry showed you a little bit about the search, but I'm going to show you a little bit about the quick launch feature in particular. And you'll notice at the top corner of your screen is this little quick launch. And it works very much like the Windows search. So in Windows 7, when you hit the Start menu, if you start typing the name of a program or an action that you want to do, it'll go figure out where that is in the operating system and do that. So for example, if I want to add a class, I just say, hey, I want to go ahead and add a class. Apologize. Let's start easy. We'll add new file. Okay, we'll start with that new project. It's not finding it today, but it gets me out to the action that I want. So let's go back into my code here for a quick second here, and let's say I want to go ahead and add a view. So I'm going to say add view, and this is, once again, not coming up with my option. The joy of demos. All right, so you have to trust me that add view is there. But I will show you one that I'm pretty sure works, which is view white space. So this is an option that a lot of people have asked me about when they see me do demos. And I like viewing the white space because I hate those trailing spaces and tabs. It's just a code style sort of thing. And so everybody asks, how do you turn that on? Well, I usually have to tell people, go to the edit menu, go to advanced, and find this option called view white space. Now I can just tell them, go to the quick launch menu and type in view white space, and it'll figure out where it is in the menu system. And what's nice about this approach here is not only will it go out and find you the option, but you'll notice here it's actually going to go ahead and show you where you would have found that inside the menu option, along with an even quicker hotkey to get you there. So it's trying to train you to find even faster ways on the quick launch to get to your options that you use most often. So let's take a look at an app here. I'm just going to go ahead and start it. And oh, by the way, again, one of those neat new things where they recognize that IE isn't the be-all, end-all, especially on the web, is things like launching alternative browsers. And so as a web developer out there, you've probably got Firefox, Chrome, Safari, Google, or IE, and a multitude of maybe Opera installed in your machine. And so this allows you to quickly select a default browser that you want to launch from. And that doesn't have to be the same as the default for your system and allow you to go ahead and launch your application. So I'm going to bring up my app here. And I'm thinking to myself here, is my internet connection still alive? We'll find out in just a second. So I've got a fairly simple movie-themed app, appropriately, where I'm going to go ahead and use that same Netflix API that Barry was using earlier. And I'm going to go ahead and search for a bunch of movies based on the year that it's displayed. Now, this is your traditional post-back option that you would expect inside your traditional ASP.NET app. And what's happening here is it's actually round-tripping and getting the entire view out from the server. And that's great and all, but that's not very responsive from a user perspective. First off, I've got to contend with the back and forth buttons here when I'm just trying to change a couple of options on the screen. The other thing that I have to contend with is things like knowing that when I go ahead and post back, I've got to deal with things like the various routes. And so what I want to do is eventually do a synchronous call using jQuery back to the server to get the data and just update the screen. But we got a couple of steps to get there. So let's take a look at the asynchronous nature, or the synchronous nature of this call, and we'll go ahead and do it one better. So here we've got our call, and it's a call into the Netflix OData service. Luckily, in Visual Studio 11, you can just add a reference to an OData service, much like you would a web service, and you get an object for you. I do a link query, and I go ahead and paste my results back. This is great, but what's happening here is while we're waiting for Netflix to do its operation, you're actually blocking threads on the server. In other words, ASP.NET has a limited thread pool, and actually most applications have this issue, but ASP.NET more specifically. And so it can only handle so many requests concurrently on the same machine per core. And so here we're waiting on an external operation to finish. You know, the code is doing nothing. It's just simply sitting there spinning. And so we're taking up one of those valuable spots that could be used to serve another request that actively needs some work being done. And so while we're waiting for this result to come back from our link query, you know, what we ideally want to do is kind of put that off into a reserve pool. And this is using the concept of I/O completion ports. And I'm not going to go into that in detail. That's the underlying guts behind this. But what we want to do basically is say, go get data, and then resume this thread whenever you get that data back. In the meantime, by all means, go service other requests. So in the .NET 4 world, this was done with iasync results and the begin invoke, end invoke pattern. How many people have encountered the async pattern in the past in the APIs? About a third of you. How many loved it? Nobody. Oh, no, I got one hand. Ah, busted. The thing is that they basically tried to work around the language, the concept of asynchronous. And so if we look at what that looks like, I'll just go ahead and comment out my old one here. Let's take a look at what that looks like from a... Did I change my keyboard options? All right, I'll just do the... Oh, it's because I'm running. There we go. So we'll take a look at what that looks like inside .NET 4. Now, some of this is MVC specific, but I just want to show you how ugly this gets. So in MVC, the concept of asynchronous running wasn't baked into the framework or the ASP.NET runtime underneath out of the box. And so you've got to remember to call this thing called async manager. And it's basically a reference counter that says, hey, there's an asynchronous operation going on. Just remember that so you can remember to reinvoke it after the fact. Then you've got to call Netflix catalog. Go ahead and get your data. Now, the API requires you to wrap it in a special type of object called a data service query. And then you go ahead and call begin execute. And you pass it a function that it runs once the execute finishes. In this case here, I've got to remember to go out and get the state from this really funky object called iasync result. I've got to end the execution specifically. And if I don't, it leaves me in kind of a hanging state. And then finally, I've got to pass the data out. Now, what's really interesting about this is that there's some magic going on here where it looks for another method that has the word completed at the end. So if I don't know if you noticed here, but our one action method here, which you access by calling retrieve titles, has to be called retrieve titles async, and the corresponding message has to be called, or the method has to be called retrieve titles complete. Now, this is a lot of stuff to remember to do async. And this is why a lot of people got boggled down and said, you want async controllers? I'll pass. I'll keep with the synchronous world. And it's because of this complexity that a lot of people don't take advantage of the cores and the processing power of their machines. So this got a whole heck of a lot better, starting with .NET 4.5. So let's take a look at the async await version of this. And then we'll show you how the MVC 4 went even one step further. So in .NET 4.5, we have this magic keyword at the beginning called async. And that's what's to tell the runtime that, hey, something asynchronous is coming out of this function. And so what's going to happen here is it's going to go off. And again, unfortunately, ASP.NET, this is the old API in the .NET or the MVC 3 and before API. You still have to talk to the async manager, still have to talk to the catalog, get the query, go out and execute the function. Now, where it gets a little nicer is that C# doesn't require us to go ahead and deal with that whole iasync result. Instead, we get to say, at this exact line here, I want you to go wait. And I want you to wait for this task to complete. And so it's calling off to the task parallel library, which builds us this nice little function that avoids us having to ever deal with the thread pool. And I can say, go start a new task and execute this query. And then come back to me when you're done. What I get out of this is I get that thread returned to the pool until I'm ready to continue executing. So I get the benefit and the scalability here. And I don't have to deal with all this iasync result, end invoke, begin invoke type stuff. So once I get the data, I'm going to come back here and get my data. I'm going to put it into this special collection and pass it off again to my completed event. So that adds a little bit of syntactic sugar, but again, we can do one better. And so I'll show you the MVC4 API here in a second, where what they've done is they've taken all the beauty of async and await, and they built an API that can take 100% advantage of it. And so if you're doing an MVC4 app, and you're using, or you want to go ahead and do things in parallel, life is just so much simpler. And so now here we are with our MVC4. And you'll notice this looks a lot closer to the original asynchronous method. So I'm going to say I've got an asynchronous method with my async tag. I'm going to tell it that I'm going to return a task. And it's going to take care of that task for me as an async controller. I'm going to go ahead and wait for the result. And I'm going to go ahead and return. These couple of modifications here are starting to leverage the underlying API and tying everything together to be able to make it much, much easier and much, much more, it's not verbose, but concise to write asynchronous code. And so all I need to know is that at the end of the day, it's going to go ahead and await. It's going to do a magic return here under the covers, and then it's going to continue executing code until it gets the JSON result at the end that it needs. And MVC is going to do all the work for you. And so if we look at what this actually looks like from a code perspective, let's go ahead and return my other view that takes advantage of this. Go ahead and build. Build succeeded, good. Let's F5. Again, my app here, I'm working over a reasonably quick internet connection with a small data set, but let's pick 2007 here. So I'm going to see it searching. I can now tie in things like JavaScript asynchronicity with this, where I'm going out and actually using the underlying JavaScript non-blocking on the client here, which it's naturally actually asynchronous as a language. And while that's retrieving here, I will go ahead and show you that code. Just pick a smaller data set. There's a lot of movies released in 2007. So let's go ahead and refresh that. 1935, there's a lot less movies in 1935. My cell phone's heating up here as it pulls data down. Actually, I got a server error. Let's double check here, make sure that I compiled. Do 1896. There's only one movie that year, at least as far as the database is concerned. And I'm getting a server error. Current action request. Oh, yeah, sorry, I didn't comment out. Yep, good catch. There's something where I did not comment out. Ah, there we go. Again, this is the async controller providing backwards compatibility there. So the compile actually worked fine, but the routing didn't know how to route between the two. This is the good thing about presentations. It's the world's largest pair programming session. All right, so I got my old stuff commented out. Let's go ahead and hit F5 and do a run. Next time I build a demo app, I'll actually handle the error message as opposed to just ignoring it, like a good developer. Just double check this. Ah, there we go. So what's happening under the covers here, and I'll just go ahead and pick a larger data set here, is it's going out and asynchronously getting that stuff from Netflix. My cell phone is heating up very, very quickly. And it's going to go ahead and return that data without blocking the request. And so I'm able to continue on and serve other requests while Netflix takes its time to go and figure out the data. Again, this is relevant as you do more and more complex requests. I'm doing a fairly simple one here where I'm searching for the movies. And then just quickly here for the web developers in the room, this is all jQuery magic going on under the covers here. What's beautiful, what's probably the lovely thing about it here is the fact that I've got full IntelliSense inside every single one of my JavaScript files here. And so I get all the beauty and loveliness of working with C# out in the front end inside JavaScript. Lots of great stuff there. Unfortunately, I don't have time to go into it into a ton of detail into the web stuff. But if you're coming tonight to the MetroToronto.net user group, Shane Cuslan is going to do a further in-depth in terms of what's new in ASP.NET 4.5. So how can you get involved? How can you pay attention to what's happening, specifically around the runtime upgrade? Definitely go and download the beta today. It installs side by side, but know that the framework will overwrite or replace your .NET 4 framework. And this is actually something you want to do because you want to test and ensure that that's there. I also want you to share your feedback about what you like and dislike and vote for the other feedback that other developers have left on user voice. But probably one of the most under-advertised programs, I think, inside Visual Studio that's made a huge difference is participating in Perf Watson. And so this is a little add-in that sits inside Visual Studio. And all they do is they look for long-running operations when you're using Visual Studio. And so if all of you know, well, actually, if you're all running Visual Studio 2010, when you do a file open in a project, and you see that window that comes up, loading project, and just spins and spins and spins and spins. You know, that's largely gone away in Visual Studio 11 because they've been able to gather real data on what it is that's taking the longest and focus on those hotspot areas. And so this is a really valuable add-in to just have in your Visual Studio environment today in Visual Studio 2010 because it's going to give the team real data in terms of where is Visual Studio the slowest, and so they can focus their effort on the areas that matter most. But most importantly, it's all driven by you. And so please, share your feedback on this. You still have opportunity to influence the final product. If you don't like things like the Battleship Gray UI, I can tell you there's very active discussion going on inside Microsoft about what to do about that based on your feedback. And so please pick up the beta today, start playing with it. You can work with your 2010 solutions without a problem, and rock and roll on .NET 4.5. Thanks.